The Medics Money podcast helps doctors, dentists, and other professionals make better financial decisions. Hosted by myself, Dr. Tommy Perkins, a GP.
And by me, Dr. Ed Cantelow, a GP, but also a chartered accountant and chartered tax advisor.
This podcast is for general information only and does not constitute any form of advice, and tax allowances and rates are subject to change. As doctors, especially GPs, we perform loads of administrative tasks every single day, which do very little to improve the care that we offer patients, but are important all the same. What if somebody said that they could start to automate these tasks using software, though, that you could have more time to see your patients and less time doing administration? Sound too good to be true? Well, as you're going to hear from today's podcast, there is a way that GPs can automate certain things. So registration of patients, which is a really time-consuming and bureaucratic process, that can be automated away. And I think this podcast has got a wider interest for anyone who's interested in improving patient experience, improving the lives of doctors so that we're doing less admin and more time focused on what we're good at, which is looking after patients. And it also delves a bit into starting a health tech company, getting funding from something called Y Combinator, which, as you're going to hear, is quite a big deal. So something for everyone who's interested in automating stuff, improving the care of patients, improving the lives of doctors, and starting a health tech company. And really, if more doctors start health tech companies that solve problems for doctors, like today's company, then we're going to be in a better place. So I hope this is useful to you. If you're watching on YouTube, drop us some feedback in the comments. Are these kind of slightly more outside the box episodes useful to you? If you've got any questions, put them in the comments. If you haven't subscribed or left us a review, that really helps us to help more doctors. So on today's podcast, I'm delighted to welcome Raj Kohli and Dr. Bhupinder Kohli, who are from Health Tech One. Hi, guys.
Hiya,
how
are you doing, Tommy?
So one of you is a doctor getting a phone call, which is just like awesome. But tell me, you guys are related, so should we get into that story?
Yeah, I mean, where to start? I don't know, you start conception? Is that right, guys? Is it down to bar somewhere?
I don't know. Well, I've been a GP for 33 odd years, and Raj is 30 years old.
I'm going to tell people that.
Like a typical Asian person, I thought, you know, maybe one of my kids will become a doctor. But Raj went off and did economics at university and went off and joined Accenture. I thought, well, that's the end of that. And then somehow he had some kind of transformation in his life and decided to come and work in general practice health tech. And now he's very much part of the practice and transforming us in a different way, but in a more powerful way than just being a GP. So I'm delighted that he's building on our sort of some of our work and legacy, but doing it for many other practices. So it's quite an exciting story for us.
Yeah. And I think this to jump into the segue there, hi everyone, I'm Raj, co-founder of Health Tech One. And the segue is the other co-founder, Peter, who's not in this call. But he's what got us working in healthcare, in that my mum and Pete had a sit down together, and mum during the pandemic said to Pete, hey, look, we really need a huge amount of help here. You guys know software. Why don't you come join and help out in general practice, and we'll go from there. And that was the segue in. And suddenly we saw the wonderful and crazy world of general practice, and we're like, oh my God, we can do something about this.
Yeah, and that's what excites me, really, what you just said, like the wonderful and crazy world of general practice, because you guys are helping us to reduce the admin burden. I'm really glad that Bhupinder started that story not at conception, by the way, Raj, because that's really, really, really awkward. But he did like age shame you as being 30 there, so sorry about that. Yeah, you look good for 30, mate, so don't worry. So like you were basically looking from the outside, from a software sort of consulting background, at what your dad was doing in his GP practice, and you thought, right, we can help some of these, you know, make this easier. So like, what are you doing and how did you get started?
Yeah, actually we came in to do, so what we do now is that we automate administrative tasks in GP practices, and we're live with two products at the moment. The first is around automating new patient registrations, and the second is around automating lab results, which is, we believe, is going to be really transformative. But how did it start, actually? It started with a problem that Dad had at the surgery, and I described it loosely as everything's going online, but actually they were struggling with a declining list size.
In a city part of town, which is quite odd, and we had a neighbouring practice that was essentially registering a lot of patients because they had really good digital systems to register patients. We were using the traditional, you know, bring a registration form, come at 2 o'clock, 3 days a week, and then wait, and then hopefully at some point we'll do some registration. So we went to a completely automated process that Raj and Pete invented, which is all digital online, and it worked through a website, and we sent them a link how to register. And with that, over a course of 2 years, we increased our list size by 4,000 patients, which is like getting another practice. So just to put it in context, we're actually, at the time, we were 4 practices, and we were 36,000 patients. And by the end of the 2 years, we became 40,000 patients just by the digital technology. And the other big thing was the amount of time it liberated for the staff, because it's a really boring job filling handwritten forms and putting them in manually. So that released time and energy. So it's been an incredible journey for us. I mean, I haven't done the work, we've had the benefit. So obviously recommend it to other practices.
But I mean, it's that classic thing of like, you know, the office is inside in Dad's GP practice, so we've got the 10 people next door, or software developers just like, you know, working through the night to try and like build great software. We're live now in 315 practices across the country. And the benefit is that we get to work in general practice every day. We get to see the problems, and we get to, you know, have lunch with the teams and the admin teams and be like, oh, actually, what are the issues that are going on? How can we fix this? And we, you know, people think the admin in general practice is easy, but actually when you jump into the detail of the work that the administrators are doing is deeply complicated. Mm. And, you know, small mistakes lead to real problems in setting the patient up for success.
Yeah, I love that. What better way to get to know your customer as well than be integrated like in your practice? So you're literally working inside your dad's practice every day, just like trying to work out where the pain points are, and then a software solution to the pain point. So I love that. And I guess like I came at the way that I found you guys is that I had a similar problem to your dad, that our list size was static, and registering for a GP, I don't know if anyone's, oh, of course everyone's done it. It's ridiculous. You need to bring in like a passport, a bill, you have to go to the surgery, you have to fill in the form. So there's friction from the patient's perspective, where you're just like, as a patient, you know, you can order Deliveroo with 2 clicks on your phone, but to register a GP, you have to like show your passport. And it's just like, I'm not, you know, what is this? So that was like really frustrating me. And then off the other side of it, there's a ton of admin that registration generates, which is, you know, I want my administrators to be helping patients and doing productive tasks which help improve patient care. I don't want them like converting a paper form into a digital form and then verifying document stuff. It just made no sense. So that's how I came at this, just to reduce friction for the patients, which hopefully will encourage more of them to register. And it's already encouraged 4,000 extra patients to register at your practice, Bhupinder, but also reduce friction for the admin team. So I think that's a great place to start with that kind of journey. But, you know, you're making it sound quite easy, like you just went to the practice, started writing code, but there's obviously been a bit more to it, like, because you're also in Y Combinator. Should we talk about that?
Yeah, sure, if you'd like.
Well, okay, the reason why I want to talk about it is because, like, if you don't know, Y Combinator is quite a prestigious accelerator, are we saying, that sort of is kind of famous for founding big companies like Airbnb and stuff. So you are now part of that. So do you want to talk a bit about what that means? And like, because it's quite a big deal, I would have thought.
Yeah. I suppose in the startup world, I suppose it's quite a big deal. What is it to say there? I mean, they select companies, and there's an application process, and they select companies that they think can be really transformative. And when I was going to the US, and I've just come back from the US in San Francisco, everybody was always saying, oh, you know, what does this mean? Like, you know, you're a UK company going to the US and, you know, like essentially speaking to US investors and that sort of stuff. But You know, you're going to change focus. Is it suddenly going to be about this big US vision, etc.? And I was like so proud because we went through the 10 weeks and came to our sort of fundraising process, and we just completed our fundraise. We've raised $3.5 million from Moonfire Ventures. And it was completely, you know, the vision that we presented was just a big UK vision. You know, how can we automate a huge amount of the work that exists in general practice? And when in primary care, where 90% of patient contacts happen, what a transformative impact that can have on this country. And you know, Tom Blomfield, the CEO and co-founder of Montebank, was our mentor for that. And I remember this kind of awkward moment. I was like, you know, a bit nervous about, you know, accepting the offer. Me and Pete were the kind of debating it, and I said to him, I was like, oh, you know, Tom, I just want to be really clear that I don't give a shit about the problems in the US. That's not my bag. I want to sort the problems out here in this country first. You know, I want to sort mom and dad's problems. And Tom kind of gave me this bemused look, and he was like, dude, like, it's your company. Like, as long as you want to build a big company, then and think about Montebank. That's a huge business. Think about GoCardless. It's a huge UK business, and like massively impactful organizations. And I think that's what we're trying to build here. It's like something that completely transforms the way in which healthcare workers do their day-to-day practice. And like, people like mom and dad, right? Like, imagine if we stripped the administration out of general practice. Imagine if the fucking tech worked. Like, my God, wouldn't that make this an exciting place to work?
Yeah, definitely. And I think just the amount of administration that, you know, you've obviously observed in your GP practice that is absolutely ripe for automation. There's plenty of other things that could be automated because you're kind of working on something else to automate, which is filing of blood results. So like, tell us a bit how that works. And then I just want to touch on some kind of clinical perspectives with your dad, like about automated filing, because sometimes I say to people like, you know, I'm actively pursuing automated blood test filing. They're like, oh, you know, is it safe? What about those patients where, you know, it is a major fail safe where I'll do some blood tests on some patient and I'd look at them. And then that would sort of prompt me to take some action, sometimes even if they're normal. So should we talk a bit about that? Because I'm excited about it, but it's also tricky.
Yeah, I suppose the initiation for it came from dad. So we start with new patient registrations, and that was something we were excited about. And you know, speaking to dad and other colleagues, they were just like, "Oh, it's really great that you're helping out the administrators, but what about me? What about us? Like, what are these bloody lab results I've got to sit and I need to med dad just like pulling me to a computer and then just showing me like, this is what's going wrong. Look what I have to do. How am I supposed to see the fucking wood for the trees?"
I think the problem is that we've got a lot of new staff with the ALS system. And blood tests is one of the most complex of all the tasks. You know, we can give away things like prescribing and health checks and chronic disease reviews and a whole bunch of other stuff. But blood tests just seem to just not be leaving general practice or the GP. And so the first thing we've got to do is make sure it's 100% safe, because you lose the product's confidence if you make mistakes. So these are super, super cautious baby steps at the moment in what we can do. And then verified and checked by a number of GPs. So we've got 3 or 4 GPs checking it. I think with the 300 user base or more practices, lots of practices come back and give feedback. And the best thing of having so many people trying this piece of software is the feedback loop. Every time you get a feedback loop, the product gets better and safer.
And not just for one person, for everybody, right?
Yeah, everybody gets the benefit because it's just one pathway. So they're starting off with some very easy stuff. But that's just baby steps. But you know, something like a bit more complex, say for instance a vitamin D, there are sort of some just slightly low vitamin D stuff that patients only really need to collect a prescription over the counter, and a lot of that could be automated. So you can code it correctly, you can send the patient a text message, you can then instruct the computer to do the prescription if it needs a prescription, but it's usually a text message because they're going to buy it over the counter. And you can send the patient quite a rapid feedback. I think, you know, there's a lot of opportunity, but I think we have to be very, very cautious. We don't make mistakes. So I've said to stay away from anything complex like full blood count, because that's really complex. Something like a cholesterol level is not too bad. Something that's easily protocolized. HbA1c's is another one that you can do And you can check if they've got diabetes or not, and then have a different pathway depending upon whether they're diabetic or pre-diabetic or what's coded or not coded. What they can't do, they just leave. But it'd be good to have 10, 20% of your results filed before you come into work. And they'll give you a list of all the stuff they've done so you can check if you want to do audits and checks.
Yeah, and just to hear you talk about it like that is like, this is why I'm excited about it, because like, let's say I get 100 blood results a day. There's probably only 5 of those that I actually need to like have a serious think about and do something about, but they're buried in amongst 100 others. And when you're on your 90th result of the day, you know, I might just be myself, but back me up here, Bhupinder. You're not as sharp as when you're on your 10th result. And then if that really important one comes to be the 99th result, you've got like this decision fatigue. So if you could take away the low hanging fruit, the cholesterols, the HbA1cs with a suitable protocol, and then just leave me 20 blood results and say to me, look, Dr. Perkins, you did have 100 results, but now you've got 20, but these are the 20 you really need to like think about deeply. It's not buried in the woods of 100 other normal results. And everything just works against us as GPs because I don't know what it's like in your system, Bhupinder, but in our system, a potassium of 5.6 is marked in red. Probably not an issue. A potassium of 8.5 is marked in exactly the same way, just in red. So it's like things are, if that was a plane, it would crash. Because if you're in a plane and the toilet's blocked, that's just like a little ding. You might want to check this out. If you're about to crash, it's like, guys, you're about to crash. But in medicine, it's just like the about to crash signal is the same as the toilet's blocked. And as GPs, we have to filter through this. And it's just, you just get this decision fatigue. So if you guys can take away some of that decision fatigue, I think that's going to be music to GP's ears, and it will leave us more time to do what we're good at, which is the face-to-face patient care, which is, you know, what we're good at, and less time filing results that we don't need to see. So I'm excited about that. But I guess like you must have had some pushback from early. You said you had a short feedback loop, which is awesome way to get good fast. What's been like the pushback that you've gotten from your test sites, if any?
At the moment, not much, because we're just filing normal stuff. You know, that's clearly within normal boundaries, and we're avoiding anything complex,
like a COVID test, like a H. pylori, that sort of thing.
But in a few months, I think the complexity will come, and then we'll get more and more pushback. I mean, I guess it's better to talk about the registration software, because the registration software we've got is I mean, okay. So when they started, when they looked at our form, I think it had about 30, 35 questions on it. Yeah. How many have you got now?
I suppose, what Dad's describing is like, as we're working with Mum and Dad's practice and four practices in East London, you know, they had a certain process, but then every new practice that we brought on board, like each one of them started at like, they added 4 things they needed to add, then it was 3 things they needed to add, then it was 2 things, then it was 1, and finally, like when we got to around about 25 practices, that was the break point where it was actually like every new practice that came aboard, they were just like, wow, you do this and you do that. And you know, to give you an example, in one practice really wanted to make sure that we checked to see that the person with stated parental responsibility was on the clinical system before we registered a child. And so now that's a thing that we do for every single child that gets registered, right? There is a check to see if the stated person of parental responsibility is on your clinical system before we register the patient. And it just kind of like unlocked this sort of realization that we have one of our GPs. He said to me, he goes, you know what this is, right? This is like a safety net. Automation is a safety net for general practice, in that everything is done the same according to a protocol. And instead, and we're going to move, you know, in the next 10 years away from GPs doing every single individual thing, but to them setting the parameters by which we do the work, right? Which the automations do the work for us. And that's just going to be really transformative, not only to the, you know, patients, but also to the actual job of being a GP. It's like, I'm no longer just doing, I can set the parameters and watch my population get healthier.
So we've got now over 100 questions, I think, in your registration form.
Over 100 data points.
And then you've got other bits coming. You're going to do the housing status, and we're doing the core 20+5 questions, so you can find out those people, identify them. Yeah. And then it does a whole bunch of other things, like send certain text messages off.
Yeah, I mean,
verification.
To be more specific, you know, like asking all the stuff that you need for your GMS1 form gets put into the clinical system, plus all of the actually additional stuff that you might have as part of your new patient health check, like height, weight, BMI, that sort of stuff. We're asking about alcohol status, their smoking preferences. We even have this kind of like quite unique, it was quite kind of cool thing where it's like personalized patient communication. So if the patient puts on the registration form that they're a smoker, we ask them, would you like smoking cessation advice? And if they say yes, we then send them smoking cessation advice and code the fact that we sent it back on the clinic system. So it's like, you know, it's quaffed from the off, is the idea. And we've got some pretty exciting things coming around, like online access too. We'll start being able to do that straight, you know, straight from the beginning.
Yeah. Some of the safety stuff, safety anything around prospective access, that'll be quite important. Finding out if there's a social worker involved. These questions we couldn't really ask easily with the paper form. And so I think we've got a much safer process. And I think it's also helped us with our income stream. Because our registration forms used to take 2 weeks on a bad time because somebody was off sick or on holiday. Or someone just got lost, you know. In case you find one behind the desk, somebody's forgotten to register. Yeah. That doesn't happen anymore. Everything gets registered within how many hours?
10 hours.
Within 10 hours. And the patient gets a verification saying, look, thank you, you're now registered. And they ring the practice and the next thing you know is, you know, it's all there. So it's not just a registration process. I think we've improved quality, custom patient experience. Yeah. And brought in income because this size is income.
Yeah, and there's this quite nice, unique thing that maybe I was explaining to you, Tommy, about because we get paid every quarter. And for every single patient, you know, on average, you get paid £163 per patient. So if you're running a backlog, say, of 100 patients that you haven't registered at each one of those quarter moments, there's 100 times by £163, which is like 16K if you average that over a year. That you're missing out on income just because of speed of registration. So, you know, in all of the practices, and we've grown so fast. We've got, you know, as a company, where we've grown faster than Accrix did. We've done that because, you know, I think the cost balance works out. People are like, oh my God, you're generating income for us as a practice. And that's, you know, I think it's transformative.
So we've saved money as well because, I mean, we would pay somebody like £12 an hour or 15 by the time you do the admin cost. They could do about 4 forms an hour if they could sustain it with the boredom. And so that worked out about £4 a form is what we calculated at.
£375,
yeah. What was costing us.
Yeah.
And what do you guys charge?
£2 per registration, yeah. Only on registration.
But completed registration.
Yeah.
Yeah, so not the incomplete ones. Because then, you know, some of them aren't done. Because it's about, what percentage can't you do?
Yeah, so 80%, you don't, no touch needed in that, you know, patient, yeah. Everything goes through perfectly. And then there's about 15% where actually you just need to confirm a couple of details. So say the patient spelled their name wrong, their name was Peterson instead of Peter, but they got that slightly wrong. You would just update that on the system and, you know, the edit, and we would go back and automate it for you. So, you know, actually a lot of practices are, you know, getting plus 90% automation. And, you know, organizations where they've got 5 receptionists doing that work now just need one to check on the registrations every now and then and make sure that, you know, everything's in order and they do the additional, like, safety measures as per their practice requirements.
And is other stuff you save that you don't measure, like the training costs, induction costs of the staff? And then, well, what if regulation changes and they have to ask some more information? But my practice forgot to read that regulation, but another practice did, and they told them to change the software. So I have the benefit not just of our practice, but of all the practices who've contributed in adding to the feedback loop. So I think this is the way to go, really. And like you say, Tommy, the thing is to start doing other bits of software or other tasks. I think one other one that we're very keen to do is to start doing blood test requests for chronic disease management. There's quite a request for that. What do you think about that?
There we go.
No, like, I just think, like, I think you guys are being smart because we've seen companies come along and say, we're going to automate GPs, right? I'm talking about Babylon. So if you don't know about Babylon, you do a bit of reading about Babylon, but unfortunately they've just gone bust from a $4 billion market cap at one point. But why you guys are being smart is you're not saying, right, we're going to replace GPs. You're saying, you guys do a lot of repetitive administration tasks that could be much better done by, you're just picking the low hanging fruit is what I'm saying. And I love that you're picking the low hanging fruit. Declaration of interest. I am a user of Health Tech One. And Raj, you said that about 80% of registrations go through no dramas. Well, I think you need to update your stats, because in the first month we did 69 registrations, of which 64 went through no dramas. So about 90%. And it's just saving so much time. And the reason why I'm interested is that someone's just built 2,500 new houses in my practice. Because it's the NHS, of course, we get no new resources to manage these extra patients. We get no new funding for our building. We just have to work with what we've got. And so these 2,500 new houses have the potential to overwhelm my practice if I don't start automating low-hanging fruit, simple tasks. So that's why I'm interested in it. And yeah, it's working great. I guess I did mention, like, thinking a bit more strategically there. We talked a bit about Babylon. What have you learned from, you know, those that have gone before you and the mistakes that they made in terms of a strategic side of the business, Raj, for, like, running this? Like, I don't want to point the fingers at Babylon, but obviously that is quite a high-profile example.
No, it's great. No, it's a great example. It's quite funny because I think that was the example Dad used to use. It's like, oh, look, all of our young and healthy patients are going to Babylon, and you know that, you know, and other providers, and you know, it changes the balance of payment for local GP practices. And I think, you know, in some ways, what we're building is like similar tech to, you know, what Babylon built, in terms of they have an automated registration process, but we're democratizing that and giving it to all the practices that we work with. And We're not trying to build like our own, you know, in a mega institution like, you know, Babylon. Actually, there are some incredible, hardworking teams that exist in the 6,500 GP practices across the country who know their own local population so well. And what we need to do is empower those people with like actually good tech. I mean, it is very hard to think of a decent company in primary care bar Accurix. And, you know, I think learning from companies, you know, who've gone previously, I think Accurix is a great example to follow. You know, they've done incredible work and really built products that are used on a daily basis. And I think we have that same ambition.
We've got used to, in general practice, really poor quality software.
Yeah, shit.
And, we just think it's just the norm. I mean, although it's better than hospital software, so we, you know, go around with, you know, big egos thinking, oh, we're doing quite well. But actually, compared to industry standard, the software that we have to deal with is not great. So what's great is having this bunch of sort of really sharp engineers and software designers who sit in the practice who we can talk to. And they've certainly opened up the way we think in the practice. And I know they've energized a lot of the other members of the team. There's a lot of, you know, conversations back and forth. And there's a whole load of ideas that others have got that want to automate. But it's just finding a product that's applicable to all practices, because you can't just do one for just one little region. So if you've got a local process, so that won't work. So something that will apply to everybody.
There's lots we can do.
And I'm sure you'll know more.
There's lots we can do. I mean, I'm really blessed. I mean, somebody's not on this call because I think it makes sense just have the two of us for now. But my co-founder Peter, he's incredible. Like we met at school, so we've known each other for many, many years, and he used to work as a software engineer at Monzo Bank. So he just brings that sort of like quality of engineering and that level of aspiration to the company. And like, you know, what a joy. Yeah.
And it's all customer focused. So one of the things that you always do is check what the feedback is from patients, which I think is really good. It's, you know, not all software companies do that because the customer isn't the GP practice or what it is, but actually our customer or our patients are far more important to us. So we've had almost no complaints after, I think, how many have you done registrations for us? Maybe 15,000 by now?
A lot.
Over the last 3 years?
Yeah, in total across all practices, but this week we did our 200,000th registration, which is kind of really cool. But the average rating from patients is 9.8 out of 10. So, you know, we ask every single patient afterwards, hey, what did you think of your practice's registration process, right? And, you know, they respond 9.8 out of 10. The people are even leaving Google reviews on practices' websites being like, that's the easiest registration process. And it's like the first, you know, first moment of setting them up for success, and it sets the precedent. So in our one practice, you know, George at Waterloo Group Practice just said it just took the sting out of the patient engagements that he was having.
Yeah. And it's open 24 hours a day, which is great.
Yeah. And it's like, it's just like the first contact with that patient. And if it's a slick, automated online process that works and doesn't involve your passport scanned in, taking it to the desk, waiting for the paper to get lost in the back of a reception, etc., it's just a great way to set up a long-term relationship with that patient. So it's like first impressions really do count. And it's so simple, really. It's just like decent onboarding, which is what you'd call it at a tech company. But in GPs, it's difficult to do, you know? I mean, like, and you mentioned AccuRx there. So yeah, like, I think there is parallels here. We had Jacob on the podcast and I said to him, like, I remember in the pandemic, I'd never done video consultations before our practice and I needed to do a video consult. I got this email saying, install this software and you'll be able to do a video consult. Anyone who's ever tried to install software on an NHS computer just knows that it's just pain. I clicked the link of the AccuRx and installed it. And then within about 5 minutes, it was working. And I was just like, wow, this has never happened before. But why is that? Like, why is the software so bad? Like, it's just annoying. But I think for you guys, similar experience. So I just I'm using this for registrations at my practice. My admin team set it up. The onboarding is super slick and it just works. Like, as GPs, we want software that just works. And it sounds simple to say, but it's probably not that simple to do. But why do you think, like, is it because of the legacy EPR providers, electronic patient record providers? Why is the software in GP not so good?
It's a deeper question. It's there are a couple of threads to this. I think, yes, there is a historic various EPR providers that haven't really innovated as an organization. They're not focused on, like, building new features and trying to recruit incredible engineers. Instead, it's about, like, how can you increase the margins, etc. But also there's a slight system thing in that we often procure things from central bodies, like from integrated care systems or CCGs or whatever they used to be called. And the payer is no longer the user, right, in some cases. And when you put budget in GP practices' hands to make calls about what software works for them in their practice, it's like the payer becomes the user. And actually, GP practices are so fucking innovative. Like, you know, we've grown really fast and working with so many, like, practices because individual practices have the autonomy to choose and say, hey, look, I want to go live with this and this makes sense for us. And think about AccuRx, like, they had, you know, not just for, you know, their levels of growth weren't just incredible for healthcare. They were across all sectors. It was incredible. So that just tells you that, like, when the appetite is there and when a software company builds it right and makes it, you know, and puts the effort in, you know, practices will, like, uptake and use it, and the capacity is there. So it's a tough question to answer. I think it's a mixture of how the budgets are done and also, like, the fact that we have a bit of duopoly in terms of clinical systems, etc. But if that's, yeah, it's a small answer.
It's a great, like, what you just said there, the payer is not the user. Like, you would not believe how many times clinical software is enforced upon us as practices because the payer is not the user. You just summed it up perfectly there. And I think, like, AccuRx have done that well. I think you guys have done that well. I mean, like, this is another, like, strategic question. Is this the sort of grilling you get at YC, right? Because answer this question. Like, it basically, right, what you've got, I'm going for a railway analogy. Stick with me, right? So if you own the tracks, yeah, the train tracks, you're never going to have a problem. But if you just own the train and not the track, you could have a problem in the future. So if we say that the legacy electronic patient record suppliers, of which there are two dominant ones in this country, they own the tracks. Do you worry about having a train and then they could just say, sorry, the tracks are shut? Like, is that an option? Is that a possibility? Is this like what they ask you at YC, or am I way off track?
No. It's a good question about, like, yeah, defensibility. It's called platform risk is the technical term. So, yeah, like, a platform risk is a risk for any big, you know, any young startup that operates in a certain space. So any startup that used to work with Facebook, or any startup that built an app, right? They had to go on an app store, right? You had to work with Apple in some way, right? There is some sort of platform risks that exists. I suppose our bet is that we are, you know, a team that's going to build really fast and work within the space to deliver something that works for practices. And I think if, you know, enough practices get behind us, you know, we can navigate any problems that we, you know, encounter.
That's a kind of a sidesteppy answer, but like at the end of the day, you know, defensibility comes down to like how fast can we move as a company, how quickly can we build things that people want or people need.
yeah, and I think there's a few of you now, like you, AccuRx, there's Arden's, kind of all building on that EPR's underlying tracks, shall we say. So yeah. I was kind of getting you to lead into like, when are you going to bring out your own EPR?
not ready to say that. I mean, I often like how many clinical systems do we have in the UK, right? Not just across GP practices, but across the whole health and social care system, right? Say we had 40 clinical system providers. Do we need to build the 41st? Is that what we need to do? Or do we need to connect them all up? And I think that's the beautiful thing about, you know, what we do at HealthTech One is that, you know, we connect up systems. And I think that is the slightly more exciting thing. What if we connected up all the systems and then created like a unified patient experience? I mean, that would, you know, imagine you had a registration passport that you never had to enter your details in as a patient again, like going from any transfer from one healthcare organization to another. That's an idea.
Yeah, I mean, that's the dream. Like, you know, patients could have their own record and they can just transfer it between systems smoothly. But if you crack that one, you'll definitely be sorted, because I think that's a big problem. Okay.
By step.
Maybe steps, yeah, no, definitely. Okay, we're getting to like the business end of it here, but the other thing that it would be remiss of me not to mention, especially in the health tech space, AI. We're in peak AI hype mode right now. So, you know, at Medix Money, we use AI quite a lot. In my day-to-day practice as a GP, I don't use AI at all, really. Mm. What impact do you think large language models / AI is going to have on this space? Like, are you actively building AI products? Like, give us like the inside steer on the AI hype.
Yeah, a lot of practices will ask me, like, oh, God, is it machine learning? Are you guys using AI? And actually some practices say, God, we're using HealthTech One. It's HealthTech One AI to get, you know, things done. And, like, a lot of these, I think there's a lot of confusion about, like, what is AI and what it's not. But what's the point of AI? The point is to automate a whole task. And that's the focus that we've taken on. Is that if we try and give practices one less task. So we automate the whole thing end to end, and we will use whatever automation technology that is appropriate to do that, rather than thinking, hey, we're an AI company and, you know, it's healthtech1.ai on our domain name. And so we can tell investors, hey, we're an AI company, et cetera. This is why it's exciting to invest in, like, you know, invest in us. Like, it's about doing what works. And there is a time and space for AI. Like, my God, there is going to be a time when we can analyze like a whole patient's record with artificial intelligence very quickly, and, you know, do a lot of outreach campaigns and, you know, get patients in for their appropriate checks that exist. There is going to be a lot more functionality, but like, there's so much low hanging fruit that needs to be done first. And like, everyone's trying to fucking automate the doctor. It's just like, I just feel like I hear this stuff in the health tech space, and I'm just like, oh God, everyone's, you know, they're not actually doing anything that's providing real value now. We don't need to automate the doctor. Like we need to make their lives easier with like good tech that just works.
It's good to hear that as a doctor. As your dad is nodding along that we're not going to get automated. But I think like, if you could just automate away, you know, repetitive tasks that we do every single day as doctors, and leave us time to do what we're good at, which is those human one-to-one interactions. That's what we're good at. That would be an amazing start, and you guys are doing that. Just to finish up then, like Bhupinder, the longer that I've been a doctor, the more that I've benefited from, you know, the more that I've realized the benefit of experience. And no offense, but you are very experienced as a GP. You told us that beforehand. It's really tough to be a GP at the moment. So give us like your sage words of wisdom in terms of the future of general practice, you know, because being a partner is pretty tough at the moment. Locums are struggling, but you've been around a long, long, long time. again, no offense, give us some words of wisdom, because you know,
you've got the gray hair to prove it.
Look, I mean, I hear that all the time, and people say, oh, it must be horrible being a doctor, being a GP, it's so hard. And so I still think it's probably the best job in as a doctor, as a clinician, because you've got some autonomy, you've got some control. I feel really sorry for those consultant colleagues of mine who are my age, and they're burnt out, not because of the patients, but because of the management, the hospital management, giving them no autonomy. They can't even get a secretary to help them out. They've got no choice. And in general practice, we can come up with an idea, and by next week we can implement it and see if it works or not, and then change it a bit more. So it's great. And I think general practice is never going to disappear. In fact, the job's got infinitely better with the number of other doctors or other staff we've got, like our staff, and with so many options. I remember, and again, not boasting about my age, but when I started, we had 5 GPs, a few receptionists, and 1 nurse. Now, if we've got 5 GPs, we'll have at least 12 other clinical staff. There's 2.5 clinical staff for every GP. A lot of the boring, mundane stuff has gone. A lot of the complex stuff is left with us, which is what we're trained for. And a lot of the routine stuff that we don't need to do is being done much better by other people, like the pharmacists and pharmacy techs and other people. So I don't really buy this theory that we're having a tough time. I mean, we are having a tough time because there's a workforce crisis and there's economic issues. But as a job and as a career, I think it's as exciting as it was before, and maybe much more so. Yeah. So I'm an optimist.
What was it? Somebody said to me, a pessimist is just an optimist with experience, right? But I feel like you definitely prove otherwise. I'll tell you a short story, Tommy. Me and my sister have had this shared folder album, online album on our phones, and it's basically it's called Boopy Sleeps, and it's basically photos of my dad asleep in the most crazy places, like awkwardly hanging off a chair, standing up somewhere, and this was the impression I had before I worked with my dad, is that I used to just think, oh, my dad's, he's getting a bit old, isn't he? The dinosaur is coming home, falling asleep everywhere. And I was thinking, God, imagine what he's like this at work. And that was my impression. But when I started working with Dad, I was like, fucking hell, he's like on speed, he's so quick and loves his work. And I just always found that super inspiring. And I think having got to spend some more time with other parts of the healthcare system, and seeing other healthcare systems, where else do you have so much autonomy in healthcare to design the way in which you deliver patient care? And I think the problem with a lot of practices I speak to is they tell me, they're so in the work, they don't get to work on the work, and there's a capacity issue there. But I've got a friend who's became a GP partner, and I said to her, she was like, oh God, I'm a GP partner, how tough. And I said, God, it's the most exciting thing in the world. You can just implement all this technology, you can change the way in which you do things, and every day your job is around making patients healthier, right? And that's the job. And you people take for granted. I used to work in consulting, I used to work, I was in the top floors of HSBC and Barclays, in those awful buildings, working in finance, and it was just all about my manager's promotion, right? That was what the work was about. I don't even think we did great work, it was about selling the next project. It wasn't actually about truly doing amazing stuff. But stepping into primary care, this was this amazing feeling that I had. It was just actually so often profit is not the heart of what we do. It's about delivering incredible patient care. And where else do you have that? This is our job. We get, paid a decent salary to come in and do good for the world. And I think from a more spiritual space, that's an amazing center to be from. What we need more of is we need more funding as a space. We need more funding in primary care. We need recognition that prevention is better than the cure. And we need government support for that, I'm sure. And we need a whole bunch of healthcare companies, health tech companies coming to this space and thinking we're going to make incredible products for general practice. And you know what? I'm starting to see it, you know? Like, I'm seeing, I mean, I'm telling people, everyone I fucking tell them, they come fucking work in healthcare. Like, I went to Y Combinator, and I met so many other, all these health techs, all these startups, not even healthcare. They were, you know, AI for this, AI for that, like, AI for sales management. And whenever they had, like, trouble or problems, I'd go, exactly what you're doing, come work in healthcare. Like, it's so much more fun and meaningful, and I love it.
Yeah, it's so good to hear that because I feel like I'm swimming against the tide a bit because I'm sending out a similar message. I'm well past my honeymoon period as a GP partner coming up 5 years now. I get paid to help people and make them better. That is the best job in the world. It's an incredibly difficult, challenging job, especially some of the circumstances. But just to hear you, Raj, and especially you, Bipinda, after 32 years, did you say, as a GP, yeah. Like you still got the passion for it. And yeah, like, you know, I decided I was going to use Health Tech One in my practice and I was up and running within 2 weeks. I didn't have to go to any board meetings. I just said to my partners, look, this does this, do you fancy doing it? And they're like, yeah, 2 weeks. If I was in NHS, like, I do feel for our consultant colleagues, as you say, who are doing their own secretarial work, you know, they don't have offices and it's just basic stuff. So right, that's the become a GP advert over. Do you want to put the the Health Tech One advert in? Because this is just like at Medics Money, we just love things which help doctors to help patients and make them better. This, I'm already using it and I love it. So how can people get going with this if they want to, Raj? What's the best way to get hold of you? You're wearing your like corporate banded t-shirt.
Have you seen this? There's this little picture that Amy, one of the engineers, drew at the back. And it's basically like all these animals. It's a kind of a clinical setting. But at the company, everybody's got their own, you know, everyone's an animal. Pete's a dragon, for example, or whatever. Amy's a cat. You know, like we've got these. And she designed this t-shirt. So, what's the plug? The plug is like, let's have some fun together. You know, let's go and build some exciting stuff in general practice. Has changed the way we work. And the best way to get in contact, you can either like drop me an email. So that's raj@healthtech1.uk, or reach me on LinkedIn. Or best thing, actually, would just be go onto the website www.healthtech1.uk. You can click sign up, and that'll just get you started, or you can ask to speak to one of the team, and you know that's a more formal process, and you know, well, you can speak to somebody today if you'd like to.
Awesome, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for what you're doing with like the automation. Like I say, it's already helping my patients, so cheers for that. Mm-hmm. And Bipinda as well, thanks for your time. You better go off for a nap now by the sounds of it.
Thank you.
Take care.